Wake up call.
This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, Augusta National, tough in round one. Justin Rose is the leader at 7 under par, a 4-shot lead heading into round two today. In the opening round back in November, not one player shot in the 80s. Everybody shot in the 70s because the course was so welcoming and receptive and just come on in and score and make your birdies. And we love it. Take us to task. And then this April, the course went, we're not doing that anymore. It firmed up. It has been difficult. There were 12 scores yesterday of triple bogey or worse. Jordan Spieth had a 7. This interesting statistic came out. The last golfer to win the Masters with a 7 on his scorecard was Craig Stadler in 1982. That's how far back you got to go to find a guy with that kind of number on one hole and ended up the champion. But Justin Rose was brilliant. And here's the thing. It would have been a brilliant round if the scoring conditions were okay. They were nearly impossible, so it makes it even better. That must have been to the guys who shot 76, 75, 74. Justin Rose's total, especially a 30 on the back nine, might have looked like a 58. It might have been that different. Like to say, hey, man, I gave it everything I got. I shot 2 over. He's 9 shots better. That he might as well have made a birdie on every single hole out there. But today could be a different day. Rory McIlroy struggled. His game was struggling coming in. Bryson DeChambeau, who I was curious about, would a lot of what he had, you know, how way he navigated Augusta in November, would it lead him to a different approach in the spring with his long drives? He only made 1 birdie for a round of 76. It's okay to hit it a million miles, but you better figure out a way to score around that golf course. All right, coming up, the good, the bad, and the dumb. And then later on this hour, we'll get into the details, the early details of the draft that is coming up at the end of the month. It is Sports Map Radio. Hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with 2 N's as we continue with Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, good, the bad, the dumb, the Friday edition gets you into the weekend feeling good, feeling bad, but not feeling dumb. I mean, I don't want you to feel that way. But let's feel good as we head on a Friday. What's the good of the day?
The good of the day? I got a double good for the day.
Well, that's even better. It's even better.
It's Friday. The first one is it's a tradition like no other. Or is it any other?
Tradition like no other.
Tradition like no other. The menu at the Masters.
For the champions' dinner?
No. Just the menu. If you and I were able to go to the Masters.
Concession stand, yes.
Menu. Because this kind of hit Twitter once again. 2 things happened. 1 was a guy says, you have $15. What are you getting?
Oh, my God. You can get the whole thing.
You can pretty much buy the entire menu.
It's great.
And that's when a guy said, no, don't list 1990 prices. And you had to be reminded that, no, these are the prices there.
1990, that was the year I went to the Masters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can still get an egg salad sandwich or a pimento sandwich for $1.50.
It's amazing. It's awesome, and they do it. And you know what it is? They are proud they do that.
Yes.
That club is proud that they love it when people talk about the prices. They love it when they say, man, you could go there with $10 and feed your family, for crying out loud. The quality of food is good. People love this. It's not like cheap sandwiches. That's really well made, and they're cheap. And they're cheap because the Augusta National does respect the patrons that come in. So, you're right. It's a great tradition. And And you know what? Arthur Blank with the Falcons, didn't he start doing that with Falcons
he did that,
games?
Yeah, he did that at the – I mean, everyone just needs to adopt it.
Just figure out a way to make it a little bit – we're not asking for 50-cent sodas. That's not what we're asking for. But they don't have to be $7 either. I mean,
right.
Come on.
I mean, Arthur Blank, I think his sodas are like $2 or $2.50, and you get free refills.
Yeah, that's totally fine.
Yeah, you're making enough money.
Right.
I mean, Masters, forget about it. Soft drinks, $1.50.
Yeah.
You're going to town all day.
Absolutely. It's great. So, absolutely great. All right, what's the second good?
The second good of the day is Lions punter. I've got to remember his name. Jack Fox has a radical idea. This is the time of the year where the NFL starts looking at, oh, maybe we'll look at some rule changes, right? And he has a rule change that I'm kind of on board with. And it's rewarding kickoffs.
Okay. Let's hear it, because I'm always interested in things like this.
How would you feel if a kicker on the kickoff, you know, from the 20-yard line, and he sails it through the uprights, which happens every now and then, gets a point?
No, I don't like that.
You don't like that?
No, I don't. I don't like that.
Because, I mean, it doesn't happen as often as you think, and it's a really hard thing to do, but you could get a point if you were to sail it through the uprights.
Oh, okay, wait. Oh, all right, so but then they would they kick off again, or would the ball be just like a touchback?
I don't think he's gotten that far.
Okay.
I think he was just like, let's just reward it, because it's literally only a handful of guys have really done it.
All right, now wait.
Because it's an 80-yard kick.
I initially said I didn't like it. Now I'm warming up a little bit to the idea. Because there's some strategic element here.
Yeah.
Right? Like, kicks are going right through the end zone anyway. Like, you know, the old days where you'd be like, we're not going to kick it to Mike Smith, who's one of the best running backs, Devin Hester, right, on kickoffs. You would angle the kick so you wouldn't go to Devin Hester. Well, now they're just kicking it through to the end zone anyway.
Right. Right?
I mean, they're not even worried about that anymore. They know it's not getting returned. The only reason you will return a kick is if it's just poorly kicked. It's like, oh, I messed up. I kind of mishit it a little bit. It's a little windy, so it's into the wind. Weather has something to do with it. I may have slipped a little bit on my drive. But on a normal condition, normal wind, normal day, normal beautiful afternoon in Cincinnati, it's going through the end zone. So might as well add an element to that could make it exciting.
I mean, one of the things you need to realize, too, is that it's – you know, it's 80 yards. So those goalposts, I mean, just squeeze your fingers together. That's what it looks like.
That's not an easy kick.
That's not an easy kick to say, hey, you know, and especially now that you're trying to aim. Every once in a while we see someone kicking through the uprights from 80 yards. I mean, they all have the leg strength to do it, but it's the accuracy part that gets it.
Yeah.
And as Pat McAfee pointed out, he's like, imagine this. Game tied, 4 seconds left on the clock, kickoff through the uprights would win it.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Now you have an 80-yard bomb to win the game.
Yeah, that would be my only down part of it, would be like, okay, we're getting the ball back. We need a field goal to tie. Oh, now, okay, forget it. Now we need a touchdown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could be fun.
Could be fun. You're right. Could be fun. Yeah, all right, I'll warm up to that idea.
Could add a different element to it.
That's right.
You know, and then
for a guy that hates the onside kick, I should be more warm to something like this.
Right, yes.
Is, you know.
But I mean, the onside kick is stupid. The best rule that they need to do is change the onside kick. You know, 4th and 15.
No one, and I mean, and don't even try it, because maybe I'll get in a back and forth with you on Twitter if I feel up to it. No one can convince me the onside kick is still worth it.
No.
I am done with the onside kick. I think it never works. The time it does work is so rare, it deserves to be enshrined.
Exactly. So I mean, it feels like that way, right? Like
every time I see one that's successful,
take
the
football
to
Canton right there.
Exactly. Just take that ball and bronze it, because like, you're never going to see that again.
I'm under the impression the last successful onside kick was pulled by the Saints, and I can't remember what Super Bowl that was.
Exactly.
Until, like, 10 years ago, 15 years ago now.
Ultimate surprise, right? But when the team is waiting for it,
it never works.
Get it?
And they know to put their hands team out there. You're not.
Forget it.
You're not getting it.
What's the bad of the day?
The bad of the day is a little bit of Masters controversy going on. I don't know if you caught this yesterday when they were doing the opening tee off.
Yeah, I did.
With Jack Nicklaus, Gary Player, and Lee Elder. Well, Gary Player's son, Wayne, was out there, and there's a little bit of controversy to whether or not he was marketing golf balls behind Lee Elder during a shot just because of the way he was holding it. Now, there's video, and you can break it down like a Zapruder film, okay? Because there's one video that shows him just kind of holding the ball, holding the sleeve of balls casually, where you can clearly display the logo just behind Lee Elder's head. And then there's another video, a second video, if you will, of him, like, you know, just it was, hey, I pulled out this ball for Gary Player to tee off, but, you know, I wasn't really maliciously holding it this way to advertise.
Yeah. So here's the thing. Gary Player, that his caddy is his son Wayne, and Gary Player he's an investor in the company that makes that golf.
Yes.
So that's where the controversy. If he had just had a sleeve of Titleist, people probably would have been like, all right, whatever.
Care.
But it's a unique brand. It's a new brand, I think. And Gary Player is a financier, one of the financiers of that brand of golf balls. So now that's kicked in the conspiracy thought and the controversy that this was orchestrated by Gary Player's son to get a little marketing when the Lee Elder picture was going to be taken.
And then coupled that with kind of the – I don't want to say shady, but I can't think of another word. Shady past of the Player family. You know, Gary Player's, you know, kind of been thought of like maybe he cheated his way to a couple titles. Much of the same way. Who's the guy right now that everyone accused of cheating?
Patrick Reed.
You know, much of the same way that he did.
Yeah.
Where, you know, he might have used a foot wedge, if you will.
Right.
To improve his score. But also his sons have had a checkered past as well.
Oh, all right, well.
So maybe that adds more. I don't know. It'll probably be one of those controversies that'll end up in the presidential book.
I think the Masters, I swear, I think I'm surprised that as orchestrated as that moment is, right, as basically like, look, this is a ceremonial hit by these guys, and Lee Elder didn't hit because he's in a cane, but he's still got the honorary starter role. I think they should have said, no, guys, you're not pulling out golf clubs. We're not pulling out golf products. You know, Gary's going to hit, but give him the ball ahead of time. We're not showing off any brand of anything. We're going to take pictures, all right? If you want to wear a hat with a logo, that's fine. We're not pulling out anything else. And somebody should have ran that. Some PR person should have ran that. Said, babe, that sleeve, put that away. Put that in your pocket.
Yeah.
We're taking pictures here. Right. Instead, how did that shot go down with a caddy holding a sleeve of golf balls in front of the camera? Like, it's silly. But believe me, I if I'm leaning towards done on purpose, not done, I'm leaning on done on purpose. It seems to not necessarily Gary Player's like telling his son, hey, make sure you got that golf bag, golf balls right in front of the camera for me. Will you do that? I'm sure his son was like, hey, dad's vesting in this golf ball. click, click.
Something simple, right. Something minor, go unnoticed
like
a little
I'm
bit.
Holding it.
Yeah.
And, you know, get in the shot of Lee Elder. It's going to be all around the world, so I'll lean it in a little bit.
So a little bit of Masters controversy.
Yeah,
we don't get that too often.
No, not really. Yeah, Masters controversy. Not very often.
Not very often. Only
3 months.
Yeah, pretty much.
What's the dumb?
The dumb of the day. I had one, but we talked about earlier, which was it fell more under dumb luck, which was Rory McIlroy hitting his father. I just find that so awesome.
That's awesome.
I mean,
that's great.
It's not really dumb in the true sense of how we normally treat the dumb, but I mean, of all the people to hit, I mean, thankfully you hit your son. Or hit your father.
Would you be, as a dad, would you be happy that your son hit you with a golf ball?
Oh, I would. I would love it. I would, you know,
but
say.
But at the same time, it's not, you know, let's be honest. You're not standing in the middle of the fairway.
No. That's true.
So if your son
but
is hitting you.
But he's not too far off of it.
Like, if your son is hitting you, it's you're standing in a place he's not supposed to be hitting a golf ball.
Yeah.
Now, listen, if my son was a golfer and he's not, but let's say my son was a golfer and he was an amateur and he was 19 and he was on the Walker Cup team and he's playing at University of Florida and he was good enough like to earn an amateur invite to the Masters and I'm a parent, my kid's in the Masters and I'm standing at two or wherever and his ball hits me, I'd be like, oh my God, I can't get over my son's in the Masters. But if my son was a 30-year pro with like five majors under his belt and one time was the number one golfer on the planet and needs a Masters for the Grand Slam, I kind of think I'd be like, all right, what are we doing over here? Like, well, what happened here?
I think what you do is you turn to your son and go, hey, after you finish this hole, I want the ball.
Yeah, right. I
do. The ball's mine. I'm putting it on the mantle. Yep. Every time you come over.
That's right.
That ball's going to be staring at you, and yeah, you're going to, I'll guilt you into whatever I want.
I was standing 30 yards off the fairway, and you managed to hit me with it, Mr. Professional. I get paid money to do this.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, no doubt.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, they do Thanksgiving in Ireland, right?
No. They don't.
All right, well, St. Patrick's Day.
Well, what, when the Mayflower turned around and landed on Ireland after they did their thing
here?
Yeah,
you know what? Now, you know, second guessing, you know what the dumb of the day is?
How about Christmas?
Yeah, you know what the dumb of the day is? The dumb of the day is me thinking that Ireland celebrated Thanksgiving.
That's awesome. Yeah, every family dinner, whatever they celebrate in Belfast.
Hey, England, they celebrate the 4th of July, right?
Right.
They fire off fireworks and have barbecues, don't they?
Oh, goodness. So if they get together for a family function, yeah, the ball on the mantle.
God, it's Friday.
He's like, Dad, I was struggling with my game, and you were right there, and I landed the ball on your leg. Just awesome.
Why couldn't it have been like, you remember that scene in Happy Gilmore? When he has to hit it off what's the guy? That remember the big actor, James Bond?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's right, yeah.
I can't remember the actor's name, but it landed on his foot. And it's like, oh, you have to hit it off my foot. Why couldn't Rory's dad just kind of roll it onto his foot?
Knowing,
like, here you go, son. Clean shot.
I got to be honest with you. If my kid was in the Masters and he was like, and a ball hit my foot, I'd probably pick it up and just go throw it in the fairway. Like, it bounced off a tree. I don't know how that happened.
Yeah, I'd kick it.
Right, I'd kick it right back in the middle of the fairway for him. All right, that's the good, the bad, and the dumb on Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, Josh Edwards is going to join us coming up in 10 minutes from CBS Sports. We're going to talk the NFL draft. And listen, I think we're going to have a number of guests on between now and the 29th. And as we get closer and closer to the draft, I think we're going to be narrowing our focus. I think today is just going to be sort of a general, where are we at with the talking points? Where are the team? Because I think there's so much more that's going to happen between now and the 30th. What is that? Today's the 9th. So it's what? 3 weeks away. Yeah. 3 weeks is when we'll be breaking down the draft. What happened on that Thursday night. So we'll talk to Josh Edwards about some of the thoughts. Did you know one of the teams I was thinking about? One team that could move up to that fourth spot, and if they did, wouldn't there be a Thursday night explosion? What about the Patriots?
No, I constantly think about that, but
think about that Thursday. What that feeling across the country.
But here's the only issue I have with it: the Falcons couldn't do that for the Patriots, could they?
No, because of what happened in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
But what if the Patriots are like, we got more draft picks than we need? By a mile.
Oh, I'm
happy to give you everything.
I would love for it to happen.
I just want to hear people's reaction around the country. Like, I want to be on Twitter the second the television coverage announces that the Patriots have moved up to take the fourth pick in the draft. Now, if it happens before, like if they cut a deal before, like what San Francisco just did, I don't know. It would lose. The impact would still be there, but it would lose its magical Thursday night draft moment, right?
I mean, it would say they did it today, and it was like almost a Friday news dump. I mean, it would almost feel like a waste.
Yeah, right, exactly. Like
are you doing it today?
You're at work. You're getting ready for the weekend.
Yeah.
You know, your wife's like, you want to go out for dinner? You're like, yeah, let's go out to dinner. Blah blah blah. And then you get a little alert: Patriots trade. All the list of picks to the Falcons for the fourth pick. You'd be like, oh, that's interesting. But imagine all of us sitting there. We're watching the draft Thursday night. Right? Trevor Lawrence goes one. And like, yay, Trevor Lawrence. I don't know how virtual it's going to be this year, whatever. But whatever it is, they're celebrating Trevor Lawrence. Woohoo! Urban Meyer's on TV talking about, hey, we're going to win the Super Bowl. Yeah. And then it just progresses to the next pick. And then next thing you know, Adam Schefter is reporting the Patriots have moved up to four. Yeah. 49ers take Mac Jones. Justin Fields is right there.
Or is it Belichick, Trey Lance?
Or Trey Lance, doesn't matter. Slides into the fourth spot. Falcons get a building blocks for the future, and the Patriots get their future quarterback. The electricity, oh, so thick you could pour it on pancakes.
It would actually, Twitter would cease to exist, I think, at that point. I think it would melt Twitter.
By the way, O'Reilly Auto Parts is here to keep your car on the road with the right parts advice from their professional parts people in their free loaner tool program. No need to purchase a tool if you're only going to use it once. Your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store has more than 80 specialty tools available to rent for your next repair. Refundable deposits are required at the time of the rental. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today. Ask about their free loaner tool program or visit O'ReillyAuto.com. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. Yeah, I think that would be pretty awesome. I don't think it would be awesome from a Patriot hater standpoint.
No.
I think it just for the feeling wow, this is crazy.
All right, are there still Patriot haters? Or are they Patriot haters or are they Brady haters?
That's a good question. From
now on. I mean, I know
it's
before.
Kind of the debate, right?
Before, yeah. I mean, the debate used to be, you know, who's the key to the success? Was it Belichick or Brady? Now we know that Brady won a Super Bowl. Do we still have Patriot haters because they didn't really do much last year?
Did you get the feeling at the end of this past Super Bowl that America had turned their opinion on Brady? Like, wow, that's awesome, dude. You went to Tampa Bay and still won this thing. Or do you think America was like, oh, man, we still hate it when you hoist that trophy. God, again, this is all I've been seeing for 20 years.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the only way I can, I guess, expand on that was that everyone loved the fact that Brady was drunk at the Super Bowl parade.
Oh, yeah.
That he had to be helped out. But it was something to point out, say, see, he is human.
Right.
He's flawless. He does have flaws.
That moment when we were processing the championship.
My opinion on him, you know, I mean, I've always liked Brady, but there was a little bit of me, and I was like, man, this is absolutely incredible. And that started happening about the third quarter of the Super Bowl.
I really did not want, when Brady went to the first one, I thought it was a great story. You know, young kid taking over, took the job from Bledsoe, really good team, a defensive team that, you know, got through the tuck rule, beat the Steelers. I thought that was cute. By the time he was doing it, like where he beat the Carolina Panthers and was beating the Eagles, like I was getting nervous. Like I didn't want Bradshaw's legacy of 4-0 and Montana 4-0. I didn't want anybody to be 5-0, right, in the Super Bowl. That's why I was really rooting against him when they went up against the Giants that first time. I still am blown away by this one thing. A lot of times when somebody's going after a record that is that you don't think you'll ever see in your lifetime, we sort of warm up to the, no matter who it is, we sort of warm up to the idea. Barry Bonds was an exception, but remember, we loved watching McGuire and Sosa chase the season single record, right? Then when Bonds did it, we didn't care. And then when Bonds was beating Hank Aaron, we were even more kind of ticked off about it. But when the Patriots went 16-0, the amount of people that were openly saying, I do not want to see perfection. I'm like, you may never see it again. You may never see 19-0. You may never see it.
Yeah.
And they were like, I don't care. I don't want this team to get that. I do not want this. A lot of it was Spygate, but I think people took Spygate way more personally than they probably should. If it didn't really, you know, but I think it was that team. I think that like people were like, no, I have no interest in seeing this. They were so happy the Giants won that Super Bowl. So happy that team and those two individuals in particular weren't going to go down in history for that reason. It was amazing to me because we normally would like, you know, it doesn't really matter. We still like to see those kind of things happen, but we didn't want them to get it. Like, if it was anybody else, we would have been happy. I think even if the Cowboys had gotten it and Jerry Jones was going to brag about this, even from the grave 50 years later, like he'd come back as a ghost every year going, 19-0.
Hologram would just pop up.
Exactly.
At AT&T
like they'd make
Stadium.
A hologram of him saying it every year. Right? He'd be just celebrating with like a hologram Jerry Jones popping a cork 25 years after he dies.
Yeah, you'd be able to go to his tomb and push a button and he would appear.
Appear, pop a champagne cork when the last unbeaten team loses. Right? If you told America two choices, Patriots or Jerry Jones forever, they'd choose Jerry Jones forever.
True. Very true.
They did not want the Patriots to win the Super Bowl and go 19-0. Hated the idea. I do. I'm now starting to like the idea of a Jerry Jones hologram.
Oh, it's a must now.
Now they got to do it. If they do it, now, Dallas, work on that technology. Talk draft next.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsNap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, let's go to the Progressive guest line. Progressive making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Josh Edwards joins us, CBS Sports. Get a little primer for the draft that's coming up in 3 weeks. How are you, Josh?
I'm doing pretty well. Thanks for having me.
All right. So we've been waiting for this draft because of Trevor Lawrence. We knew he was going to go number one. He's that kind of quarterback. But now this has become quarterback draft. How deep is it? How many could go in round one in your thoughts?
Yeah, I saw Stanford's Davis Mills mentioned in a first round mock for the first time recently. But I still think it's going to be five quarterbacks. And that's Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, Justin Fields, Trey Lance, and Mac Jones. I think we're pretty confident that it's going to be Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, Mac Jones going 1, 2, 3. And then possibly for the first time in league history, we see quarterbacks go with each of the first four, first four picks in the first round, with the Atlanta Falcons possibly being a team in the market at number four, or another team jumping up to get one of those other quarterbacks. So I think at the end of the day, we're looking at pretty strong odds that five quarterbacks are taken in the top 10, and that just means that there's some really good talent that's going to be available for other teams early in the teens.
And when we get to that, when we come back to that, in terms of the quarterbacks, what does it say about the way quarterbacks are being developed? Is it just one of those years where, hey, look, this is, you know, teams need quarterbacks, these are the best available, or is there something that is allowing the quarterback development to occur where guys are legitimately top 10 picks?
Yeah, I would say they're legitimate top 10 picks. I mean, there is a little over-evaluation because it is the quarterback position, but I think each of these guys has a strong case to be, you know, a top 10 pick. I'm probably the least high on Mac Jones of the five. But I understand why, you know, he might be an intriguing option for San Francisco because he does everything that they ask of him. When you look at college game, there is a lot more passing that's going on right now, which, you know, as we all know, repetition leads to better success. In just about everything that we do in life, repetition is always going to help us. And as these college quarterbacks become more exposed to these passing offenses, and they start getting those repetitions, that's just strengthening their overall passing prowess. We see a lot of baseball backgrounds with some of these guys. When you look at, you know, obviously Patrick Mahomes and the way that he's able to throw from different arm angles, and that's kind of become a trend as well, where, you know, it's not so much breaking down the over the shoulder throwing motion. I mean, you've got to be able to throw sidearm, you've got to be able to throw underhanded, overhanded, every which way. That's going to be really tantalizing for NFL teams. So the more that you can do, the more that it's going to help your case in today's NFL.
It's hard to read teams now, but do you get a feeling that Atlanta would go quarterback, or do you think they're just waiting to field all of the offers that would come their way for that fourth pick?
Well, by all accounts, they seem to be open to dealing down, which is not something that I would recommend them do, but that seems to be the direction that they are trending at this point in time. So even though you've got a new head coach and a new general manager who, you know, by all accounts are going to have some patience in that front office, you know, an organization that's been very patient with its decision makers in the past, now would be an opportune time to take a quarterback that could be there for the next 15 years. But it seems like they're going to possibly trade out of that pick, which if you're not going to take a quarterback, I think that's the smart move.
Do you think New England gets aggressive here? They're looking for a quarterback for their future. Do you think they get aggressive here and start making phone calls to Atlanta and saying, we got some picks here, we got some trade assets to talk to you about?
Yeah, I think Denver and I think New England are kind of the two most aggressive teams to watch as we approach the draft, because New England has made several big acquisitions during the offseason. They are building a roster that they feel can compete. And the only real big question mark remaining is at the quarterback position. You know, there's reasons for Cam Newton's possible struggles last year, but I think as long as it took New England to re-sign him, it kind of tells you how they view him at the quarterback position. They're obviously still looking for an upgrade, a guy that Bill Belichick can trust down in and down out. So I think that, you know, possibly going and trading for Jimmy Garoppolo is an option, but I wouldn't be surprised to see them get aggressive and trade up and get one of these top quarterbacks because they just don't have many other needs on their roster.
All right, so let's talk about the players that aren't quarterbacks that are going to go high in the draft, and the names are familiar to a lot of people in terms of Ja'Marr Chase. You got Kyle Pitts at Florida, Devontae Smith, the Heisman Trophy winner. Some of the other names that you think are going to be around that are not quarterbacks that will be making some impacts in the first 15 picks of the draft.
Yeah, it's funny talking about all of these top prospects because some of them played this past season and some of them opted out. In the case of Ja'Marr Chase, he opted out this past season, and I think some people kind of forgot how good he had been the prior year with Joe Burrow. This is a really special talent at the wide receiver position. And to go even farther, I mean, Jalen Waddle and Devontae Smith out of Alabama are both really accomplished pass catchers themselves. And deserve, you know, consideration among the top 10. Kyle Pitts is just really unique. When you look at the depth of tight end across the NFL, there's not as many guys that are making the kind of impact that Kyle Pitts could possibly bring to the table. You know, you're talking about the Travis Kelce's, the George Kittle's, the Darren Waller's. You know, the sample size of tight ends having success in the NFL is much smaller than what we see at the wide receiver position. You know, you can get good wide receivers on day two or possibly even day three of the draft. So I do wonder if that possibly factors into a team's decision-making in the top 10 as they're deciding between some of these elite pass catchers.
Do you think it was a good idea for a lot of these guys to take the opt-out? I mean, for Chase, he's high on a lot of people's boards, but for other players that have decided to take that year off, work out in whatever way they were working out, is that being received well by people in discussing their status, their draft status?
I think it varies by position, by situation, because some teams are going to really do some digging and try to determine the true motivation for why they opted out. You know, I think it's a really unique situation where it's kind of tough to be critical of any player's decision to opt out because of the circumstances that, you know, we've all been through over the past 16 months. But I do think teams will dive into it and try to learn the true intent behind those decisions. As you said, you know, there's guys that were projected in the top 10 that opted out, and that probably didn't affect them that much. Whereas there's some other guys, Gregory Rousseau, to name one, that might be more affected because we didn't see him this past season. And then his testing at his pro day recently was not as mesmerizing as we had hoped it would be. So there's these lingering questions that just weren't able to be answered by him playing a season this past year. So I'm not sure that teams are going to be comfortable taking him in the top 20 when things roll around here at the end of April.
Has the evaluation been tough with no combine, second year that we haven't had it, but in terms of the combine and the all the other elements that we do, personal interviews and whatnot, is there a lot of emphasis on that? Are those really, really important, or can we not have those and still make proper evaluations on a guy's ability to play at this level?
Yeah, I think it's better served validation. It's kind of been refreshing, honestly, to just kind of rely on the tape, what these players were able to accomplish in their collegiate careers and try to project those to the NFL, you know, as opposed to all the other information that comes with it. Obviously, that's information that's vital for NFL teams trying to learn medical situations and background and, you know, whether player X or player Y is going to be motivated to continue producing in the NFL and have a long, sustained career. That's something that's more valuable to NFL teams than it would be for me. You know, but the NFL Combine is more about validation, you know, trying to confirm what you've seen on tape, whether that's how fast they run, how quick they are in the three cone drill, that kind of stuff. And I think the last time you and I talked was actually at the combine last year. So
yeah, right.
It's kind of crazy how things have changed over the course of a year. But it's been a very unique process, and I think the teams that, you know, don't try to make excuses and actually came up with a plan during this time are going to be really well equipped to take advantage of the circumstances. You know, I think we're moving towards an age where we're not so reliant on the 40-yard dash as much as we are play speed, because, you know, collegiate teams are putting these training, however you want to call it, outfits on their players these days to measure output and to measure health and all of these different things. And that's all digital information that can be transferred to NFL teams at some point. So you're getting a better idea of like play speed and stuff like that. And I think it really ultimately could take over for how we value the 40-yard dash and some of these other drills.
All right, one final question, and again, when you look at the talent that will go in round one, and however you've got that listed as players, is this an exceptional year of talent? Is it a good year of talent? Is it an okay year of talent? Just the overall guys who you feel like, hey, these are going to be difference makers. We've had some years where it's been great and some years where it didn't work out so out. But in terms of what you're seeing coming out of this class, how good is this class?
In terms of guys that I actually feel really comfortable with, the ones that I would have first-round grades on, it's a little bit smaller than what I've had in recent years. But I think the depth in this class is much better than we've seen in recent years. I think you could really get some key difference makers into day three of this draft. I mean, nice. I think there's some top 100 caliber players that, you know, could still be available late round three, early round four. And in that case, you're getting some really good value for those teams and those players. But, you know, there's just so many question marks, whether it is the opt-out situation or some of these answers that we didn't get over the past, you know, 6 months from a playing season, that are just, you know, it gives you a little bit more pause. It prevents you from considering these guys to be first-round locks, because there are some key question marks that a lot of these guys have. So top 15, I think, is really where I feel the most comfortable. But there's really some difference makers that could be added all the way up to day three.
All right, 3 weeks away. Really appreciate it. Josh Edwards, CBS Sports Progressive Guest Line. Really appreciate your time. Thank you so much. Hope to catch with you soon.
Of course. Stay safe.
Absolutely. Love it. Josh Edwards, again, CBS Sports on the draft and a Progressive Guest Line. Quote, buy and save on home insurance with Progressive new Home Quote Explorer, only at progressive.com. All right, some more thoughts on the draft coming up. But before we do, once a reminder that Tubbo Towels, heavy-duty cleaning wipes, will challenge you with your toughest messes, because they have got what it takes to get that job done. They break down the bonds that hold dirt and grease together on one of the largest toweled wipes that you will find. They come in a 90 count, 30,000 five-star reviews for a reason, because you can use it on so many things. Outdoor furniture, your car, walls, tiles, paint rollers, fabric and carpets. But because it gets rid of the grease, oil and tar, food and drink stains, the chalk, silicones, permanent marker, ink glue, you name it, Tubbo Towels can handle it. Vapor lock lid keeps the towels moist, so they're always ready to be used, and they're gentle on the hands. Aloe vera, vitamin E, and lanolin are blended into the Tubbo Towel, so not only does it break down the dirt, but it's good on the hands as well. Tubbo Towels are available at AutoZone, Napa, Advanced Auto, O'Reilly, Pep Boys. So check them out, Tubbo Towels, for the tough jobs that you need to get clean. Tubbo Towels. All right, more draft talk as we continue on Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsNap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, this hour of Wake Up Call presented by Rocket Mortgage. Ready for a new home, Rocket can. Our thanks to Josh Edwards talking about the draft. Wow, that is 3 weeks away. 3 weeks we'll be yapping about the picks and the surprises.
Can't wait.
Jerry Jones reportedly is fascinated by Kyle Pitts, Florida's tight end. And Cowboy fans are a little nervous because they really need defense. He's got the 10th pick, and I don't think Kyle Pitts will be available at 10, but you never know. I mean, you don't know what happens. Is that
something the Falcons should go after?
Kyle Pitts or
Kyle Pitts.
Kyle Pitts, yeah. Kyle Pitts is a great player.
Just feels like that gives them all the offensive weapons except running back.
I feel like, though,
Matt Ryan should have a fantastic year then.
All right, I think if you're Atlanta, if you don't need a quarterback, you want to stay with Matt Ryan for a while. I really do think you start figuring out how you can still get your guy and get rid of the fourth pick. And it's not as easy because you have to be really careful. You have to kind of really play and do your homework and really understand the where everybody else is going and whatnot. Because if everybody wants quarterbacks and they're calling you, there might be that one team that's like, no, that's the guy. You better make sure that whoever you're trading, that the first when we're swapping first round picks, that you're still ahead of the team that would take a guy like, let's say, Kyle Pitts that you're interested in. But if you trade that pick, I mean, the Bengals need offensive line, so they'd probably go in that direction. Miami, I don't know if Miami would grab them. But you better be careful who you trade that pick with. Like, if you trade it with New England and they give you their first-round pick, I don't know if they have one.
England traded up for the Falcons pick and then chose Pitts?
See, that would really be, that's like 3D chess.
That's Belichick's move, right?
Right. We'd have to really process that, But what, let's see. I'm trying to think.
I'm
looking up and down the board. The Patriots are picking 15th. I'm looking up and down the board to see if you're the Falcons, who you would talk to make sure you could still get Pitts and trade that fourth round
pick.
Well,
it'd have to be the two teams they lost to in the Super Bowl. Those are the only two teams.
Yeah, that's right. That's true.
You got to go Patriots or Broncos.
Yeah, that's right. Broncos are definitely on the clock. Like, definitely want to make a move to get one of the quarterbacks. But five quarterbacks in the top 10, whether they really deserve to be in that position or not, is irrelevant. It's the fact that this is when you got to go get those quarterbacks, even if you think, he's normally a late rounder. All right. Thanks for joining us. We will see you Monday. Enjoy your weekend. Tony D, Ron Culver, it's Sports Map Radio.